Andy?
The one other thing on tolerability, I think it's obviously important to look at that. I think the good news is it is similarly tolerable to rituximab. The one note, there was a fairly high incidence, I thought, of grade 3-4 infusion-related reaction at cycle 1. 21% had a grade 3 or 4 infusional reaction. That was, I guess, the bad news. The good news is, somewhat like rituximab, the body acclimates, and it dramatically dropped even a week later, because this was day 1, 8, 15 dosing for cycle 1. So even by day 8, the overall incidence dropped from 69% to 3% in terms of infusional reactions, and there were no grade 3, 4. So obviously still caution on that first dose that you're giving of this agent for untreated patients.
I'm kind of curious, has anyone in this room used obinutuzumab or been in a trial?
Yeah.
Any experience you'd like to relate about that?
In our experience, we've used it in lymphoma, not in CLL. And the toxicity is higher than rituximab. The first infusion in particular, we had patients, I remember, where the protocol says you're supposed to finish the infusion. We had to worry about either admitting the patient or having the patient stay extra late because our infusion room was closing. They have changed the way that the antibody is given, where they usually now are giving the first dose over 2 days. And the first day, it's a very small dose to try to abrogate some of this. But on the toxicity standpoint, it's not life-threatening toxicity, but it is a harder antibody to give. There are other points to make. The dose of the antibody is higher. CLL is a disease where some previous studies, even with rituximab, suggested that there might be a dose response. And in fact, when we give FCR chemotherapy, the dose of rituximab is higher than we would give in lymphoma. So there are certain people who might argue that one of the reasons why you're seeing benefit with the GA101 here is you're simply giving more antibody than you are with rituximab.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So Mike may have insights on that too. He thinks a lot about antibodies. I don't know. One of the questions I was going to ask you as a follow-up to what Neil was getting at. So if this study turns out to be positive and the progression-free survival benefit is there, I think the question on the table that's literally a million or billion dollar question is, should GA101 replace rituximab in BR and FCR? And although the rituximab doesn't show significant single agent activity in CLL, it's in at least the FCR space where overall survival seems to be improved when you add rituximab. The mechanism may therefore be different when it's synergizing with active chemotherapy. And do you think that a type 2 antibody might, you know, some of its benefit might be less in that setting where you have such active chemotherapy, or do you think that you might build even more?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and I don't know the answer, but I'm happy to answer it. So I think there will be additional benefit when it's used in combination. I don't see any reason to think that you would lose any of that novel effect of this antibody when it's in combination with a cytotoxic. So I think it will likely, you know, if the phase 3 studies bear it out, I think it will become probably the combination antibody of choice, you know, if the phase 3 data support that and support the safety of it. Just the other counter to the issue about using higher doses of antibody for CLL, SLL, is that we did a small pilot study at our place, and I won't go over the background biology of what led to it, but we found that frequent low doses of rituximab could be very effective in CLL. So we did thrice weekly 20 milligrams per meter square of rituximab in relapse refractory CLL, including 17p deleted patients, and showed very high response rates in those patients. So we did that for 4 weeks thrice weekly, and actually have done a very small pilot with Adrian Wiesner at NIH looking at sub-Q rituximab. And there's a French study now looking at frequent low-dose sub-Q, just like alemtuzumab, which uses a much smaller dose of antibody with thrice-weekly sub-Q dosing, can be used. So that's also being tested now, and maybe that's a way to, you know, maintain people or consolidate a response based on MRD. So we always think about giving more antibody as a way to get the end we want, but there may be other strategies as well.
I'm really curious to hear what the pharmacologic basis of that is. Don't they have very long half-lives?
Right. So the basis of this was that they do have long half-lives, but what was found with CLL, and we found this sort of surprisingly, we were looking at complement activation and complement depletion. So we were giving standard dose rituximab to CLL patients and then getting blood samples at 30 minutes, 60 minutes, etc. And what we found is that there were dramatic compartment shifts where somebody who had a white count of 100,000 by 1 hour had a white count of 10,000. And then over the next several hours to a couple of days, their white count came back up, but the cells that were circulating were CD20 negative. And it wasn't because the CD20 was being masked, it was being removed by a process that we called the shaving reaction. So the RE cells were pulling off the immune complexes, CD20 negative cells would circulate, but then over the next several days, they would regenerate their CD20. So by giving frequent small doses, you avoided sort of overwhelming the system and saturating the RE system and the effector cells. So that's the proposed mechanism. And that's been shown for low-grade lymphomas. We showed it in tissue as well as circulating cells.